That's the call of the American flamingo. Flamingos are distinctive pick birds. You know what they look like, right? They got the long neck, the long legs. They are typically found in warm places like, you know, your Floridas. But a couple of weeks back, a small flock of five flamingos arrived at a Lake Michigan beach in Port Washington, marking the first time flamingos have been spotted in the wild in Wisconsin. The colorful birds attracted a crowd of visitors. Flamingo mania made national headlines. Even if you missed that big event, there's still a lot of fun birding to do in Wisconsin during the fall months. Our next guest is an avid birder who wants to make the hobby enjoyable and accessible for everybody. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Were you there for the pink flamingos in Port Washington? Have you had other great sightings, maybe more common ones than flamingos, that you want to share with us over the last couple of few weeks? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jeff Galligan is co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin and a member of the Badgerland Bird Alliance's board of directors. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Do I have this right? You were able, with some quick transportation, to see the flamingos in Wisconsin?
I was, yes, even after missing them initially in Port Washington.
Talk us through. It sounded like it was quite a little bit of a chase for you.
Yeah, I was on my way to Door County for the weekend when they initially showed up in Port Washington, so was unable to go see them. And then I had to go down to Miami, Florida for a seminar for work, a one-day seminar. And then as I'm getting ready to come back on home on the plane, I see this alert that five flamingos have been seen at Patenwell Lake up in central Wisconsin. So I just determined that I was going to get home, get my kayak on my vehicle, and get up there to see them. And I did just that.
Jeff, I got to say, you were in Miami. A place where I would expect to see flamingos, and you're hurrying to Wisconsin to see the flamingos. That's pretty awesome.
That was pretty awesome and just a bit surreal, especially when I finally, you know, was able to kayak out there because they were about 300 yards off the shore. So kayak was the best way to get anywhere near them.
All right, now let's talk about fall migration. Now, we're generally not going to see flamingos. I know there's different theories, including hurricanes, about why they ended up here. What are some of the things you're most excited to see that, you know, we kind of expect to see in Wisconsin in the fall?
Well, the month of September is huge for passerines like warblers and things like that. As we get into October, it starts to slow down a little bit on that front. But we have things like ruby and golden crown kinglets coming through. Sparrows are oftentimes later in October migrants. And then we get into the birds that move down here from farther north. And birds like waterfowl and cranes that will move through even December or later.
What are some of your favorite sites this time of year, favorite places to go to catch some of our either pass-through birds or the ones that are coming down to winter here?
Well, I like going to Barney Lake for Nelson sparrows. That usually happens about this time every year where they come down and they hang out at that place, and they're fun to go look at. I also just like going anywhere where there's water, like Lakeshore Preserve, Daniel Park in McFarland, or Lake Farm Park, Olin Turville, places where I can get my scope out and see what's coming on the lakes, because we do get some rare ducks and waterfowl that we wouldn't necessarily expect to see, but there's always a handful of neat things coming through every year.
One of my favorite birds to see in the state this time of year is the sandhill crane. I've seen a handful already this season. How long do we expect to see them sticking around?
Well, they stage and migrate all the way into December or later, depending on if the waters, where the freezing is at. Last year, we had an event at Aldo Leopold Foundation where we were in blinds on the Wisconsin River watching cranes come in and stage at night and at sunset. We saw like 15,000 of them.
Wow.
And that was, on November 30th. So they hang around. They're around. They're around as long as there's a source for food and it's not too cold.
Jeff Galligan is with us, co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, member of the Badgerland Bird Alliance's board of directors. He's filling us in on how we can get outside this fall and enjoy bird watching adventures around Wisconsin, whether you're an avid birder yourself or more in my department, a curious beginner. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a bird report for us from a local bit of nature, maybe even your own backyard? Is there a hidden gem spot where you'd like to go see unique birds? What is your favorite season for birding? Do you have any favorite places to visit in the fall? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll check out some birds that'll stick around through the winter. That's coming up on Central Time. The Northern Cardinal there on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Jeff Galligan, co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, about making birding accessible for all and how you can enjoy the birds of Wisconsin in your own neighborhood and beyond this time of year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a caller. Lindsay is with us in Milwaukee. Lindsay, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What have you seen or heard?
So the last couple nights, I've heard what I thought was like an Australian kookaburra bird. So I downloaded a bird call app and recorded what I was hearing, and it turned out it was an eastern screech owl. And I haven't seen him yet, but I've heard him almost nightly for going on 2 weeks now.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Lindsay. Nice. Can you talk about our owls, Jeff?
Yeah, well, that's a good thing to hear. They'll stick around. We'll hear owls throughout the fall and winter, and they actually are our first breeder, so they're beginning to get ready to get the mating thing going on and some of the duetting that we'll hear over the winter. So yeah, they're exciting. That's really one of the best things about winter, in my opinion.
Lindsay, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. I played that cardinal sound. What are some of the other resident birds, Jeff, that'll give us a splash of color throughout the winter months?
Well, you know, we have crows that hang around, the blue jays hang around, chickadees, white-breasted nuthatches, red-breasted nuthatches, downy and hairy woodpeckers, red-bellied woodpeckers. So there's quite a few birds that stick it out with us.
Now,
they can be fun to go see.
I've had conversations with actually the author of a book on birds who basically said, hey, celebrate the boring birds, not just the really exciting ones. Do you appreciate blue jays and crows? We see them all the time, but I've tried to get a newfound appreciation for them. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I try to not be disappointed when I'm thinking I'm going to see something maybe a little less common and see something common to reduce the disappointment, because they're beautiful and fun to watch as well. Absolutely.
And I understand you have your eyes on, you know, not just this season, but like today and the next couple of days. What are some of the birds really making their way through the state at this moment?
Well, I'll tell you, the birdcast forecast for tonight is 506 million birds.
Wow.
Tomorrow, 663 million. And then it tapers a bit with 401 million on October 7th. But we're seeing warblers such as common yellow throats, American red starts, Tennessee, Nashville, and chestnut-sided warblers are going through. The golden and ruby-crowned kinglets are picking up right now. Some of the thrushes are going through yet. So there's a lot of stuff still moving through. But we're beginning to tape off in the songbird category, and we'll soon switch to the waterfowl.
I'm always happy to see raptors. And I think most of them don't migrate or that far anyway. A lot of them stick around in the winter, right? What kind of raptors are you watching for now?
Well, the red-tailed hawks will stay here all year round, as will sharp-shinned and Cooper's hawks. But we will get things down, like the snowy owl will come down from northern Canada, as will the rough-legged hawk. They come down, which is fun. I love that about winter, is that we are actually a migration destination for birds like that, as well as like snow buntings and pine siskins and things like that.
Yeah, the snowy owls, every now and then we have, they call it an eruption, not eruption.
Yes.
Exactly, but sometimes we might see a couple few in the state, and then sometimes they all want Wisconsin for some reason. How is that at all predictable?
Not that I can tell. I think, you know, when you just begin looking at like a snowy owl or snowstorm, I think it's called, where they really might track the migration patterns, and you can see pretty quickly when we have an eruption year, because they really come through in big numbers and spread out throughout the Midwest.
Now we've checked in with the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin over the years, I think 3 years-ish old now. Can you tell us the latest for the group?
We are going strong. We have monthly events. We're actually going to be at Lake Farm this weekend, looking at hopefully some of those 401 million birds coming through. We always have some special events coming up. I'm going to be doing a speaking engagement at the International Crane Festival. We also have an event with them coming up. Going to do something with the Mead Wildlife area this next summer. So we've got stuff going on all the time.
And for
Everyone's welcome to jump.
Yeah, and that welcoming message I wanted to ask about, I think with the BIPOC Birding Club, you're making the case that if you don't think people look at you as a birder, if you don't feel welcome in the community, still get out and give it a try. Can you share some of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the research saying how important it is to be outside for our own mental health, physical health, well-being, and birdsong has proven to be something that increases well-being. And the outdoors is for everybody. And even if you have no experience, doesn't mean that it's not for you. And we can help you kind of integrate into that and begin to explore that whole scenario, because there's a lot of things to do birding and otherwise in Wisconsin. And we want to be a part of getting people out trying that as for themselves, as families. We love anybody that wants to come bird and don't need binoculars. We've got those for you. We'll have scopes. Don't have to know anything. There's no pressure. Just come and have a good time with our community.
And, Jeff, do you have thoughts? Our caller mentioned one of those bird call apps. My wife always has that ready to rock. Are you a fan of some of the technology that's out there now that we can carry around with us?
Oh, absolutely. Merlin's great. And personally, I have a hearing disability, so I don't hear very well. And it helps me know that things are in the area or that things may be in the area that I'm not hearing, and then I could start keeping a lookout for them. And if you don't know bird song, that'll be a good way to start being like, oh, that call is this bird. And then you pretty soon you'll, after repetition, you'll get used to it. Yes, I definitely recommend that.
And Jeff, as we wrap up, is there a bird that's kind of on your to-do list or your wish list to spot here in Wisconsin?
Oh boy, yes, I actually would like to see the Bohemian waxwing. That's one I have not seen yet. That will winter in like Door County in northern Wisconsin. I haven't got it yet, so I'm hoping to get that one day.
All right, hopefully this time around. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been wonderful.
That's Jeff Galligan, co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, a member of the Badgerland Bird Alliance's board of directors. We checked in on how we can all make the most of the autumn birding season here in Wisconsin. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Now, social media. You are online. You get overwhelmed scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. You see an ad. You usually wouldn't click on the ad, but you do. And you buy the thing, and then the next day, you think, why did I do that? Well, our next guest has some research that might have an answer for you. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a personal experience along those lines to share. That's 800-642-1234. Matthew Pittman is an assistant professor of advertising and public relations at the University of Tennessee. He's co-author of new research on why social media can make us more prone to impulse purchases. Matthew, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start with a concept before we get to your research and social media. This idea of cognitive overload. What is that?
So human beings, even though we use computers, our brains are not computers. We have a finite or limited processing capability. And certain things like social media, because there's so many different forms of media, there's text and video, and there's a post from our high school friend, and there's something from our spouse, and there's a post from The Rock about a workout routine. All these things use up little bits of processing power, leaving us depleted the more we use it.
I have a for example. When I first started hosting an afternoon talk show, it was a little stressful. I was cramming a lot of information in my brain. And I remember a couple times going to a restaurant after the show, meeting my family, picking up a menu, and just not having the processing power. Just handed it. My wife knows what I like. She ordered for me. Is that cognitive overload?
Yeah, that sounds like emotional overload too, and I wish you the best. But certainly
well,
that would be some kind of cognitive overload too, especially if you went right from work to do any other task. We're not very good at task switching or multitasking. So yeah, that would certainly qualify.
Okay, now let's go to your research. You're looking at social media. Tell us a little bit about the experiments you set up and what you were hoping to find out.
So we used food as an item for all three studies because presumably everybody has to eat and we're all at least a little bit interested. Study one, we used like one of those meal subscription kit, Green Chef type things. Study two, we used ice cream. And study three, we used coffee. And we would, there was one condition that was a control condition where we didn't do anything. We just let people look at the ad and actually use their mental capabilities to decide, do I want this or not? And then another condition, we would have them memorize like a 9-digit number, which is how psychology studies have done this in the past. And then the third condition, which is what we wanted to prove, we had them use Instagram for 30 seconds. and having them use Instagram, their own Instagram, for only 30 seconds left them more mentally depleted than memorizing a number, and way more than the control condition. And then once they were in that depleted state, they were more likely to be influenced by or susceptible to popularity metrics like a high number of likes or a high number of comments.
Okay, so the alarming thing to me there is 30 seconds. Like, I know, even I'm not a huge social media guy, but 30 seconds, I could do that easy. That small an amount of time made a noticeable difference?
Yeah, that's a walk down the hall. That's a walk to check the mail. But it makes sense, because in that 30 seconds, compare it to, you know, television or a movie or other media, 30 seconds on social media, you can see a post from like five brands, 10 different people, some of whom you know in real life, some you don't. So our brain is like a Rolodex. We're constantly shifting through how to evaluate. Do I know that person? Oh, yeah, they're cool. Do I know this person? Ah, they're kind of weird. Do I know that person? Well, they're a liar, so I can't trust that post. And all the shifting depletes our resources.
Now, another angle here is you also played with the number of people, or the number of fictional likes on the ads you were showing people. Did that, I guess, social media peer pressure have an effect on the decisions people made?
Yeah, so that's important to note. I don't think that using social media or cognitive overload can create a desire in us for a product out of nowhere. But kind of like alcohol can reduce our inhibitions, I think in the depleted state, if there's something we already had our eye on, like a nice glass tumbler from WPR, then maybe we are, and normally we'd say, well, I don't need that. I can't afford it. But if we're just a little depleted, then that voice on our shoulder goes away, and we just kind of think, you know what? Other people liked it. And this one has 10,000 likes or 100,000 likes. Maybe it is good enough. All right, I'll go ahead and buy it.
We're talking to Matthew Pittman, assistant professor of advertising and public relations at the University of Tennessee, looking at his research on social media and impulse purchases. Turns out just a little bit of time scrolling on a social media feed may make us a little more vulnerable to online advertising or that product that an influencer suggests we go out and buy. You can join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. If you have a question for a guest about his research or an experience to share, 800-642-1234. Matthew, I want to talk about what we can do with your research. What is your advice for social media users out there to, I guess, buyer beware?
So one thing that I have done, because I first wanted to study this because I am a victim of this too. I purchased on TikTok, I saw a thing that was, you can get a Lego replica of you and your significant other. And I thought my wife would love two little Lego pieces of us with our names on it. And it came and she said, what is this? And I was like, oh no, what have I done? But my kids love it, so it's not a total loss.
Good.
But one thing I've started doing since researching and thinking about this is, I put things in a shopping cart and then let it sit for a day or two. And then I come back and check. And with a clear head, I'll think, do I really want this or need this? And 90% of the time, the answer is no.
Interesting. A cool down period. I like that. Now, another use, and I know another of your research areas is ethics. I could see an advertiser look at your research and say, aha, yes, we're going to use this. But I'm guessing they probably already know this, Matthew.
Yeah, I'm sure the algorithm knows to target people like sports fans before the big game comes up, target them then when their minds are all frantic and frenzied, thinking about, yeah, you should buy this championship t-shirt. Yeah, I should definitely do it. We're going to win.
And do you have thoughts on how we can, recognize when we're feeling that cognitive overload, whether it's because of social media or we just started hosting a radio show or whatever the case might be?
Yeah, aside from therapy, which would be helpful for all of us, I think just checking sometimes. I try to spend a couple, like whether it's walking down the hall or again, checking the mail. Sometimes I just don't bring my phone, which seems kind of novel now, just to let my brain reset and be bored for a second. Sometimes it's before I fire up an app to use Instagram or TikTok, I'll just check make sure my goals align with my motivations. Ask myself like, all right, what am I expecting to do? Okay, I'm going to do this for 2 minutes. Hopefully I'll see something funny. I'll see a cute animal and then I can log off. So kind of being more deliberate and intentional about our use before we start going, because once we start going, we can scroll ourselves right down a very dangerous and strange rabbit hole.
I wanted to ask you about different platforms and maybe some future research. You focused on Instagram here. Are there other social media platforms you'd want to tackle in future research?
Yeah, I think the more media rich or the more involved, like, presumably the more it would tax all of your brain power, because now you're evaluating text and an animated GIF, and there's a talking head video, and there's some TikTok videos that I follow. And if you, it could basically give someone a seizure. It's like a Reddit thread story read as text over top of a weird video game in the background. So it's like for the super duper ADD, media like that, I think, is really taxing compared to like Twitter, which is a little more tame. Certainly emails, Reddit, the ones that are most primarily text-based. I think those don't use as many mental processing resources as the ones that are like every single media all at once.
Let's bring on a caller. Anastasia is with us in Stevens Point. Anastasia, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
So I actually work for a Gen Z and Millennial market research company, and we talk about this all the time. And granted, we're generally talking to brands about how they can reach Gen Z and Millennials, but the data overwhelmingly shows that when they're looking at ads and actually following through and purchasing, it's always on social media. It's the most, like, more so than any other traditional advertising source, and that's why brands have to be on social media if they want to reach those generations. But in terms of impulsive social media buys, you know, when these Gen Z and millennials, which we consider 13 to 39, when they're seeing hundreds of pieces of content, thousands of pieces of content every single day, you know, overall, it just kind of wears down your resistance to making that purchase. Mm-hmm. You see it over and over and over, you know, the way that advertisers used to try and attract people by, you know, catching them to and from their job on billboards that they might see. Now they're able to reach teens like every second of every day on social media. And so that distance from initially seeing the product to actually making the purchase is so much shorter.
Anastasia, I want to ask you, doing this kind of research for your day job, does it make you think about social media use differently?
Absolutely. You know, we also ask them how they feel about being on social media, and it's pretty mixed across the board, but they understand that it's an addictive platform, and they're making impulse decisions there because social media is naturally impulsive and encourages that impulse.
Anastasia, thank you so much. Interesting perspective. Matthew, what do you think about what we heard from her?
That was really cool. And it makes sense. If you think back in the day, you would see whatever, an infomercial on TV, you had to call, or even going to a website requires more effort, intentionality, more time. And now the time between you have an impulse and you get that, you know, your order has been placed notification could be as, I think it's like 2 or 3 clicks on some things. Like you click on the item, boom, you know, ship. If it already has your credit card info and your shipping address, just a few clicks. It's crazy to think how the time between impulse and purchase has been reduced to mere seconds.
Anastasia, thanks a lot for sharing that. And Matthew, it also makes me think, you know, you, when you were testing people, you had them recite that 9-digit number or spend 30 seconds on Instagram and then look at the ad once. As Anastasia mentioned, we might see the same ad on social media, you know, 50 times over the course of 20 minutes or something like that if you keep scrolling down. Is that something else you'd want to study in the future, that the frequency and intensity of seeing the same ad message?
Yeah, that's a really good point. The more we've all seen, I'm sure, posts where you see the ad the 20th time, you're like, oh, this is very familiar. And our brains are wired to like things that are familiar. And I'm sure when we see it for the 20th, 30th, 40th time, maybe we don't even know, is this an ad or is this somebody I follow? Do I know them? Do they like me? Do I like them? And all of that would be, yeah, certainly make us more likely to purchase. So that, yeah, the next logical study would be repeated exposure, and I'm sure it would be significant. So the question will be how many extra views does it take to move the needle?
Well, Matthew, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for sharing your research with us.
Thanks for having me. It's a really cool topic.
That's Matthew Pittman, assistant professor of advertising and public relations at the University of Tennessee. We listened back to our talk with him about his research on social media and why it can make us more likely to make impulse purchases.